this immense amount of time doing this beautiful, elaborate cataloging on databases of sound recordings. Some catalogers have told me in music libraries that one single LP may represent up to 2 or 3 hours of work. Very, very professional, highly detailed work, bibliographic and discographic information at the same time that is entering to databases, much more probably than the individual person ever dreams of. On the other hand, I have seen many, many collectors with stacks of every conceivable form of indexing or cataloging. There's a big difference, by the way, between indexing, classification, and cataloging. I will not go into that now. 3x5 cards, notebooks, class books, single sheets filled with little annotations for their record, how to find the records. And at the Southern California chapter, we have found that the better you catalog your personal collection, the more increases in value. The problem is, how can you cross the institution to the person, to the private individual? My dream is that sometime some private collector can take an LP or 78 and pass a laser pen, and instantly, what they call in the business, download the information on the database to a personal PC, a personal computer. And this very exciting subject and the possibilities and the potential are the subject of this panel now. The two persons are Bill Shirk. He doesn't need any introduction. You already know him very well. He will be telling you first the background, what all of the seemingly Greek words mean. OCLC, Arlene, at the University of California system alone, we have Orion, Gladys, Melville, names for various databases. And there are dozens of similar databases. The main one probably is OCLC. So Bill Shirk will begin telling you what these things mean, what these databases mean, what is the purpose. And then Don Hickson, who is a cataloger and a record collector with the University of California at Irvine, he works at the library there, cataloging musical and recorded sound materials, will tell you his experiences, how this immense world of institutional databases can be used for the personal private collections, because most of you are private collectors, so they will benefit greatly from Don Hickson's presentation. So first, here I have Bill Shirk talking about databases.
I've got to figure out which is the best microphone, and I don't have any party records this time. They don't kind of really match what I'm going to be talking about, but boy, I wish they did. But I'll tell you, though, trying to catalog some of these party records, because you can imagine that we have cataloged all the Ray Bourbon records and put them in our collection, along with a lot of other strange materials. And I can just really re-echo and re-echo what Carlos said about... I know. There we go. Right. That we can, thank you, Mike. I can appreciate his remarks about spending time and hours and hours trying to catalog recordings, because I will be speaking from two different points of view. One, as a cataloger representing a library that inputs original and copy edit cataloging into the OCLC database, and also as a researcher and a reference librarian at the Sound Recordings Archives who uses the OCLC database, and it's accompanying in-house system from a data phase. And I sort of picture Bowling Green State University as a very, very big record collector with a very deep voice and a very large collection. And so that's basically the way I approach it. Since I'm a record collector, cataloging recordings and putting them on OCLC, I'm saying, hey, I'm cataloging my own record collection, so I better do it right. So this is pretty much what the approach is going to be, is I'm going to show you what we do to put material into OCLC and the kinds of searching qualities and searching capabilities that can be used by a collector or any user, because we, of course, experience reference users both that are collectors and researchers, and, of course, we deal with students who don't know anything about record collecting, but we have to reverse the whole syndrome and take it possibly from the vantage point of a record collector, because that's the only way some of this material can be identified. So what I'll do is I have a series of transparencies which I want to describe and show you the various ways in which materials can be located, the various fields that are searchable, the kind of things that appear on the OCLC screen, and show you how things can either be translated into something that can be searched or just be visual, or just be seen on the screen as a piece of information. Okay, let me try this first. I can tell you one example of cataloging. I love to talk about my cataloging ventures because most of you probably are aware of Bowling Green State University's two NEH grants that we received over the past 2 years to catalog about 26, 27,000 LPs. Well, previous to the 2 years, I have been cataloging LPs steadily since 1967, so I've got a lot of experience cataloging records, and as I say, LPs are just, you know, in my, other than 78s and 45s, are just in my blood, and I can pick up an LP, and it's great to see a student who I've taught will immediately look at the label and number first before even seeing who the artist is. That's a great approach to check that information out before anything else. So what I want to do here first is give you this. Now can we read that pretty good? How's it? Up? Wait a minute now. All right, do it both ways? Okay. All right. Okay. I mean, it's a lot of it just be basic. So what I have done, I'm giving you examples of ways someone could ask for something and how we search for it, and then what we find when it appears on the screen. First of all, I'm going to call up anything in OCLC that has Bing Crosby as an entry. And of course, the entry means either as a performer or as a composer or as an author, only if it's traced, because we're dealing in the OCLC database with libraries, 2,000 plus libraries, who catalog, and you're not always dealing with a cataloger or a cataloging staff that knows what they're doing. And so the problem we have been faced with is all the edits that we have had to deal with libraries that don't know what they're doing, and since Bowling Green has been chosen as one of the enhanced libraries, fortunately we can go in and permanently change and fix anything that we see that's a mistake. And it's great always to pull up something and count how many mistakes are in a record that claims to be perfect. And so what we do is we have to spend more time many times correcting errors than actually creating a new catalog record, because we know we're right, but we now have to fix everything else up. So what we've done here, I've pulled up Bing Crosby, and in the OCLC database you can see that you have books and then you have separated by date, and of course you can see that most everything is dated by ends in 1977. You can see the greatest number of recordings that's available is from 1970-79, because that was probably the dearth of recordings that came out at the time of his death. And so what I have done, you have media books, media material, sound recordings, and then music scores, so that apparently there is some music that he has written. So what I have done is I've checked sound recordings from 1900 to 1939. 1900 probably means somewhat of an open entry, which doesn't mean that he recorded in 1900, it's just that many libraries that catalog don't know the date, and so that somehow 1900 seems to suffice for a non-specific date. Okay. So what I've done here, if any of you have any questions as I go along, just yell out, because that'll be easiest. All right, now the other way is to actually put in a qualifier. There are different ways to put in qualifiers so that you can reduce the searching time. And this way here, the qualifier here was that I selected Bing Crosby / recordings You could also put /BKS for books, and then you can put a qualifier for dates to cut down on the search time. So what I've done is picked out Bing Crosby recordings, again, like we found in the other, from 1900 to 1939, and here is the array. This is the array of the 21 that we find in the OCLC database. And in here, you find albums. Well, here's a, you can't tell all the time, there's a Decca recording. MCA Coral is a reissue. JSP is a reissue from England. Biograph, we know, is that reissue of Spokane, probably is a thing on what, Totem, probably. Decca, so you can go down the list. And what I have done is picked out the song Bing Crosby's With Every Breath I Take. I've picked that out as the one that I want to see. And here it says, and they've actually expanded the OCLC database, so they will give you the label name and date. In the past, they did not do that. And so this makes searching a lot easier. You can pick out something on a the various labels. So what I've done is picked out this recording by Bing Crosby, With Every Breath I Take. Now, it's great when you print these first and they get all the... Yes, sure, question.
Item number 2, Bing Crosby and the Andrews Sisters.
Right.
Is that cross-indexed under Andrews Sisters?
Definitely. Right, right. Depending on the library. Undoubtedly, the Andrews Sisters would be traced, but you would not believe the substandard cataloging that appears on OCLC. We just have great jokes looking at screens of cataloging that are just the most abominable. I mean, it's just embarrassing sometimes that libraries put this kind of truly trash in the OCLC database. I mean, they don't leave, there's nothing after the 500 fields. Notes fields down are gone. They just don't even put them in. And so I would trust if you searched under Andrews Sisters, you would find that number 2, and maybe if Andrews Sisters are traced again in another album, that you would find that. Now, what we're looking at here, is a recording that was cataloged, and this is one that was not cataloged by us. And I'd love to just stand here and just point out all the mistakes, but we won't do that. Okay, so when we look at this, the song is "Every Breath I Take," With Every Breath I Take, which apparently is in the delimiter P, is the flip side to the 78 Decca 3731. Now, there's a couple things I would not have done. The letter A really does not become part of the release number, if you know. That's just the A side. But this library that cataloged it said, okay, 3731 A side is for here is my heart. And then if you called up 3731 B, it would turn out to be With Every Breath I Take. So what you see then is the complete catalog record there, describing in both fixed fields at the top plus variable fields in the bottom. And the variable fields are the ones that most record collectors would be most interested in, and some of them which are searchable, some are which are not. The number 4, if you can see number 4, the 028 field is the field which includes the record release number and manufacturer's name. That is searchable on OCLC, and I'll show you in a minute how I have searched this record under the number 3731. So if you've got a release number, you can call up 3731 to locate whatever records came out with that number. And then you can search by 7, of course, which is the author or composer number. And again, if you looked under Leo Robin, you would find everything that Leo Robin did. And then we have the title, which can be traced. Here we have what they call the 245 field, and the 9 is not traced with each of the separate songs. If you notice, it is traced down below with Every Breath I Take. And then you can also trace from 15 on down are tracings, but the one fallacy of the OCLC database is you cannot yet search by subject. You cannot search yet by subject. It can be like with Bowling Green, they download to the data their tapes into the data phase system, and our in-house system is able to trace by subject. But we found out with the immensity of our collection and the way in which items are actually displayed on our screen, they come in order in which they are cataloged. So if you call up a subject as ridiculous as rock music, you are completely lost, and the subject is completely useless because they are not arranged. There are systems which, you know, that will arrange them. But our system only arranges them in the order in which we catalog them. So when you find an array of 1,000 or 2,000 recordings of rock music, you are completely at a loss. Fortunately, now that with the new LC subject headings, you can subdivide by decade. It makes searching a lot easier. But you can trace by Ralph Ranger, Bing Crosby, which we found out, and that's how we located it, and George Stoll. And if you notice, there's a difference in this 511 field, Bing Crosby with Georgie Stoll. But if you notice down below, it's George Stoll. There are many libraries, and that's the other problem we face, is that there's no authority work for names. Now, this library here apparently does some authority work, but they don't state that they have done authority work in the qualifiers, after each performer's name. Our Bowling Green State University does, so you can look and see that we have definitely checked and verified whether or not it's a Library of Congress authority or it's an authority that we have created ourselves. So what apparently the authority is, that if you looked under Georgie Stoll, there would be, you know, you should be able to find, because you would be searching under S-T-O-L, comma, G-E-O, you would there find the Georgie Stoll and George Stoll together. But again, it doesn't show the authority that George Stoll is definitely the performer. Try looking up Jimmy Rogers or a John Smith and OCLC to see the array of different names, you know, that appear on the screen. Okay. This one it is not. I'll show you. I'm bringing that up at the end. I've got an example of a matrix number. There are provisions for matrix numbers, and they are searchable. And I'll show you that question was about matrix numbers. Okay, now here, I called up the 3731. There's a code that you punch into OCLC, and then you call up your numbers, and this was 3731. So you can see how the configuration of how we got various types of 3731s. Here we have the three-disc set of the Frankie Carl album, which is listed up there, the Columbia C-129, and it goes all the way down, all different records that have 3731 as the first four digits. And here, as I said, is the one disc 3731A and 3731B. So if you looked under Richard Rogers, you would, again, tell me how many you would find under Richard Rogers. We won't even talk about that. But, and I can say proudly that we have built up so much entry material into the OCLC database that in the past, if you looked up the song, a song that was somewhat obscure 3-4 years ago, you would probably find maybe one or two versions. With our cataloging system, we trace every song, and we have now built the base up to a song that once had two to maybe 50 or 60. So it is a great searching tool. If you're looking for a specific song by a specific artist, OCLC can do that in part because of the cataloging that Bowling Green has done. So you can see down here that I have searched by that 3731 from that 028 field. Okay. Now, what I've done here is I am searching, I've searched for the song My Blue Heaven. Okay? And look at how many different versions, how many did I write down? 100 and, of course I wrote this while I was half asleep, 155 it looks like, versions of My Blue Heaven. Not all different because they appear in different pressings, you know. But what you see here is screen one of two of My Blue Heaven recordings released between 1950 and 1953. And so I pulled down, as you can see, Ray Anthony, Harold Arlen, that's probably a composer entry for that, Meyer Davis and his orchestra. We had an inquiry just recently, somebody was doing a documentary on Robert Kennedy, and that was one of their favorite orchestras, was the Meyer Davis Orchestra. Georgia Gibbs, her Nibs, and then the Herman Chittison Trio, Ted Lewis, Emil Petty, Artie Shaw. So we have the whole array. So what I have done is pulled out My Blue Heaven by Herman Chittison Trio. All right. I have a personal affinity for Chittison because my old high school buddy's dad is a physician in Cleveland who treated Chittison on his deathbed in Cleveland. So I have a kind of a personal affinity for Chittison. I hate to say that. Pardon me? Oh, most complete collection, right. Then there was a cutoff. Then there was a cutoff date. Okay, now, what we've got here, as you can see, this is a record that was cataloged by Bowling Green. You can tell by the 040 field that we input the recording, BGU, BGU, and there's the release number on the number four, field number four, the 02802, it's CL6182, Columbia. If you wanted to call up and search a CL6182 and weren't sure what it was, you could call it up by that number. Here's the Herman Chittison Trio. The title, the name of the group, the name of the album is Herman Chittison Trio, and that goes down and gives you all the basic cataloging information. I know that some people are very familiar with cataloging practice, others are not that familiar, but you can see it tells you where the record was made, the label, the date of publication, and we try to be very, very correct and precise in the dates that we can assign to records. We try not to say 195-. It's very vague. We sometimes have to do that with albums that we just cannot find anywhere. And then we have what we call the variable fields, where you have open text, which is the 511. Any of the 500 fields are actually text fields where you can write material. It is not traceable, but it's very informational because here we try to describe the material on the recording. For jazz trio, and we list the three performers, Herman Chittison, you know, Abby Baker, and Everett Barksdale. We don't always go into great detail and search out every recording date of records, especially if it's not on the disc, unless it's really very important, because you know with something like this, you're going to find it in Jepson and Brunix, so there's no problem there. Sometimes to clarify an album as to why it's there at that particular time, maybe we'll put the date in. But this time we did not. Program and biographical notes on container. If it's written by a specific person, we'll put in the notes. Then we have the contents. Now, if any of you who are very, very familiar with cataloging, in the 505 field, because of the punctuation, there's a certain thing that you can notice about that record. I don't know if anybody who's a cataloger would notice that, but they are, each side is a medley. They are not separate banded songs, because you have serenade, space, semicolon, space, my blue heaven, space, colon, space. In the 05, in the 505 field, if every song is separated as a band, you have at the end, like you see up there, space, two dashes, and a space. That means that we're flipping the side over, and that's the other side. And then you have the subject heading jazz trios, and then you have the tracings. And as you can see, I told you about the authority. We have specifically stated what our authorities are. W4N means that it is not in a Library of Congress assigned authority and is not in the authority file in OCLC. OCLC has a tremendous authority, name authority file. It's very, very helpful, except in the case of Robert Palmer, which I had to write a letter to them because they had Robert Palmer, the rock performer, born in 49. Equated to be the same Robert Palmer, 1945, who was an author of rock books. So I wrote them a letter and pointed out the difference, and they said yes, you know, and they've corrected that record. And it's helpful. I know they appreciate what we do, and we appreciate in turn all the material in this name authority file. The OCLC name authority file is so important if you just want to check correct names of performers to call them up. And again, by the W4N, that means it is not in the authority file. We have established Herman Chittison, Sherman Chittison. Okay, he doesn't care. Chittison, right, period, no date. Okay, and then we trace, if you notice, we trace all the song titles. So if you called up Serenade or My Blue Heaven, like we did, or I've had My Moments on the Alamo, all of those songs are traced in OCLC. You could call up Should I and find this album and all the others. All right. We love to play games at our library, especially with the data phase, because it will tell you how many records there are, and we'll pick a song title. We'll have bets. We'll take bets on how many will turn up. I mean, it's really a great game. I usually win. I usually, when Stardust turns up, see, because remember, we also have a card catalog of records cataloged before 1979, which aren't even in the database. That's another 30,000. So we have to add on the 250 plus Stardust in the data phase, plus another 250 in the card catalog. That comes with about 500 recordings of Stardust that we have in our collection. What I've done here is called up a recording by Gene Austin singing My Blue Heaven. And if you notice, nobody has cataloged either the original Victor 78 or the Decca 78. Nope, I don't see it on there. But the album that I have picked to search is the album My Blue Heaven, we'll have to see if that's the title, which it is, of the Decca reissue. So what you see up there is the eight recordings of something by a person whose name begins with A-U-S-T and the first word of any title is M-Y. So out of there we come up with three Gene Austins doing My Blue Heaven. So you see the 57 LP, a reissue, you see the Fraternity LP out of Cincinnati, and then you see the Victor reissue album, which probably, I'm not sure if, because he did some redos in the 50s, and I'm not sure if My Blue Heaven was one of them or not. So then I called up, again, as you can see, we have enhanced this record. We have enhanced this, another library cataloged it. We enhanced it with the delimiter D in field two. And so we have included all this, so I have searched, and we found that this album by Gene Austin has the song My Blue Heaven, all right? That's the song my daughter was named after right there, Janine, I Dream of Lilac Time. Love that song. No. No. Time. Time. We call it here time, here time. Oh, key waffle. No, I'm thinking, Mike. I'm glad Mike brought that up. It's a very important thing that OCLC will only search by a song title if you pull out the first four words in a song. And our data phase will pull it out. If you maybe put the first word, second word, third word, you'll find song. But you do not have a keyword out of context searching system. And so you can't pull the third word or fourth word out and search all of the titles.
You wouldn't be able to pull radio then to get all the radio songs.
No, it'd be, I dream of that. I dream of Genie too, but I don't get either. Right. Okay. Okay, and here, what I've done, this is the matrix number I was speaking about. What we've done is that you can also enter into the 028 field a matrix number system and with a statement. And what we've done here is, and this is one of our cataloging, I should probably show you the other one first. I should show you this one first. Okay. Boy, nice bug right there. Okay, whoa. This is the cataloging that we took from the LC cataloging number R65-1916. We have enhanced it and included all the information that is appropriate, including tracing all of all the songs. This is for that Bob Dylan album, Highway 61 Revisited. And we have included. Now, again, I could go through and pick out a couple little mistakes here or there, but I think it's pretty correct. But what's important is that if I would have just found this album and cataloged it, I would not have included the second 028 field, which is the first 028, which is 02. 0 stands for release number. 1 stands for matrix number. And the reason I put the matrix number in, does anybody know why? Did anybody really peek? You know why. Right. Well, see, that's the thing. Most libraries wouldn't know. Who's to really know if R65-1916 that the Library of Congress had really did have the alternate take? I'm just saying it doesn't. And so this is the catalog record, but I chose to include the matrix number to distinguish from this album, which has a different matrix number and includes the unedited version of the song from a Buick 6, which appeared only on the initial pressings. Yes?
And 78 RPM records, a lot of companies, you can put the take number as well as the matrix number. Do you reflect that?
It's difficult. There's only certain ways in which you can indicate numbers. I mean, it's even though you can do a lot of creative things in the matrix number field, you can't be too creative because the numbers that you've got have to be controlled. And you can't control that. You possibly could control it in another 02812 field.
The second tape would be really a different record.
Right. But if they both have the same matrix number, you can always include it in a note.
Well, you already have a dash number on this.
Right. But I mean, if it is not, you know, we don't know what the dash means. I mean, if he said take one, what is the take one? How is it enumerated as a matrix number? It could be take one is really A. You know, we don't know. And you have to have some way in which the manufacturer's name, manufacturer has designated that through a number which we can control. Because even though OCLC is flexible, it's only flexible up to a certain point. And as we see here, and if any of you who are catalogers know, there's a lot of problems with cataloging recordings and describing the record. We try to do the best. Any librarian hopefully tries to do their best. Well, as I pointed out, some don't. But in our attempt to be perfect, as well as Library of Congress's attempt to be perfect, nobody is complete. And wouldn't it be nice if in the free 500 field, you could do a lot more describing of the record than just that piece of vinyl? You follow me? Like the artwork. Who did the artwork? Now, you can do all of this. You know, who did the artwork? Who did the photograph? Who wrote the notes? You can always trace the notes. But then, you know, as we said, how long is it going to take you to catalog an album? 15 minutes, 2 hours, or 3 hours? And it'd be great how many people remember the great Jack Davis, you know, cover arts and the Woody Woodward art, you know, on a lot of the album covers and the photographs of the early 50s and artwork on a lot of the Verve, you know, the Verve and Downbeat albums. Wouldn't it be great to trace all this? Well, you can. You really can. But the question is, how far do you go? A collector of record covers, I consider the record cover as much of the record as the record itself. But how far does one go in cataloging? I mean, you can go to the nth limit. I went pretty darn far one time. I make phone calls to crazy people. I got an album of a group called Satan and Disciples on the Gold Band label down in Lake Charles, Louisiana, from a friend of mine. You know, most they're known for Cajun rock, swamp rock recordings. And it was, what do we got? Hey, all right, wait, you may want to say something. He said, bug out. Okay, we could go on. All right, I won't, yeah, that new videotape. And so what I did was, I was curious because it was a satanic record. It was a satanic record and I wanted to date it. I wanted to find out more about it because it was very difficult for me to catalog it. So I called up Eddie Schaefer, the guy who runs the Gold Band Records. And I said, well, what's the story of this? He said, oh, yes, that's that record that Freddie Fender was on. And I said, oh? I said, really? He says, yeah, right after he got out of prison. He was in a lot of bars down in that area, and they got this group together, and they made this album of the satanic music, the satanic rock music. And I asked him when it was recorded, and he says, yeah, we had it in print until the Sharon Tate murders. He says, and we took it out, and I just trashed them all. He says, I didn't want to be associated with Satanism any longer. But see, sometimes you have to do this in order to get information. I call publishers, I call anywhere, and the name authorities are so important, and especially for collectors. I mean, very important for collectors when you're looking up names of people that have similar names. Because Harold Bradley, if you know, the great producer down in Nashville, there's another Harold Bradley. And you've got to distinguish between these two people. And so I had to call up the musicians union down in Nashville, and I got a birth date from him. So that we can do, one time it was, so I got this minister who gave a sermon. I called up the little Bible school that he, and his name was Bob Jones. But it was a different Bob Jones. Both are evangelists. You know, one has more money than the other. Okay, so I called up and I called up the school and they said, it was down in Kentucky, Gold Bug, Kentucky. Is that, all right? And I asked the gentleman, he said, well, I'm the, I think he's the registrar. And I said, well, who is this Bob Jones? Oh, well, he's our pastor now. And I said, well, can you give me the information about him? Oh yeah, he went and gave me his birth date, and he was born the same year as the other Bob Jones. But then I said, can I have his date of birth if it isn't too personal? So he did. And so in our authority for Bob Jones, we have Jones, Bob, 1939 whatever it is, you know, and his birth date. So, I mean, you have to go to these lengths to establish authorities. But it's very important to do all this for the collector. We want to do this for the collector, for the researcher. You've got to be exact, and this is what we're trying to do. Oh, you know, you could go on forever. It'd be nice to do that, but the...
somebody else has no idea what... Yeah. Well, I still assume it's the same person.
Well, when you search Bob Jones, you'll find the other, and the authority will be different. You follow me? The authority, it will have the same date, but will not have the date authority after it like ours does. That's the difference. Right. Well, as I say, it's a strange world, but I enjoy all this intrigue. I have lots of intrigue in trying to catalog recordings, but it was a lot of fun, but it's mainly important to get this on the data. I feel that every record that I've cataloged, you know, is one more brick in that wall, that one big wall in the sky, you know? But I just feel that pride that I've done this. Yeah. Right. But I tell you about it. Never mind. It reminds me of a Ray Bourbon record. never mind. So, okay, I think that this will conclude my portion of it. I think we're going to have another. Are we involved with the next section now? And we're ready to go. So, thank you very much.